To all those vampires. They seemed to disappear into thin air, wafting away like the early morning fog that plagued Venice this time of year. He had never been able to find them, and without them, he had nothing. Until tonight. Mircea wandered over, careful to wait until the girl was on the other side of the market, attracting the attention of another hungry soul. Then idly passed by the space between the stalls, glancing in swiftly before moving on, and frowning. Because the space was just a space, boring and empty, unless you counted a few pieces of rotten fruit disdained by seller and buyers alike, but not by a small mouse, which was daring to feast in the open. It paused when Mircea walked by, its bright black eyes alert, its tiny hands stilling on its prize. And then scampered away, taking a half-eaten plum along with it, as Mircea sighed his disappointment and his frustration. He'd been looking right at her. He couldn't have been mistaken. But there was nothing there, as demonstrated when a passing vendor, a bald man with a basket of melons on his head, bustled through, trampling the remaining plum into the pavement, and almost barreling into Mircea on the other side, before muttering a quick "scuta" as he squeezed past. Leaving Mircea with a bigger frown and a determination to figure this out. A quick duck behind a bunch of departing vegetable sellers took him between the stalls and out of sight of the angler, and a careful balancing act stopped him just inside the makeshift corridor, allowing him a chance to bend over and carefully examine the stones in front of him, to see if he could find any sign of a trap. There was none. Just the pavement, grimy from 100 boot prints, awaiting the next squall to wash it clean. The sickly sweet smell of the crushed fruit, its juices running like blood in the spaces between the stones. The feel of cracked grit, and the rough, smooth, rough surface of the rock under Mircea's questing hand. And the shock of someone's boot making a brutal connection with his backside. Mircea fell forward into a black emptiness that reached out and grabbed him, pulling him down, 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 and spitting him out into the boat of the damned.
"Got another one,"
somebody called, as Mircea hit the boards like a sack of grain.
"Already? She's earning her keep tonight." "For once,"
came the cynical first voice, as muscular legs and dirty hosen walked over Mircea. He'd landed face down, suddenly unable to move, even to put his hands out to break his fall. Or to fight when he was roughly grabbed under the armpits a moment later, at the same time that someone else seized his feet and sent him flying.
"Sleep well,"
the first voice said cynically, as Mircea landed on a pile of bodies and found himself staring down into the open, unseeing eye of a corpse. He didn't cry out. Whatever spell had immobilized his body worked on his vocal cords, too. He lay there silently, bleeding from what was likely a broken nose, as several humans thumped back up a ladder, leaving him in a makeshift graveyard. Well, at least he knew what had happened to the vampires, he thought, trying to tamp down panic. Normally it would have bubbled up into wild laughter, his usual completely inappropriate response to impossible situations. It was why he'd been able to lead a retreat of the tattered remnants of his father's army after a fool's invasion of the Turkish lands before they were butchered like all the rest. The Laughing Knight, his men had called him, amazed that he seemed so insouciant in the face of danger. They had never known. He'd just been hysterical. The same had been the case when, a year or so later, a party of senior vampires had come across him and Horatiu fleeing their homeland, in search of he knew not what. They'd knocked him off his horse, circled him round, and then just stayed there, staring at the days-old baby vampire laughing at them from his puddle of mud, and hadn't killed him. Well, some of them had started to, But the vampire in charge had stopped them with a raised hand, and had continued to regard Mircea with a slightly perplexed look on his face. Mircea had looked right back, and laughed and laughed and laughed. In the week prior, he'd been cursed, tortured, and buried alive. He'd watched his parents be butchered and their lands overrun by the faithless cowards who had once pledged them fealty. He had been overwhelmed by the bloodlust of his new state, which had caused him to almost kill a young woman after it drove him mad. He had been chased, rightly, by an angry mob trying to avenge her, and been forced to abandon his wife, in case he end their union by killing her too. In a single week, he'd gone from prince to pauper, from hero to monster, from someone surrounded by family to someone utterly alone, except for a mangy horse and a half-blind servant. What did this idiot think he was going to do to him? What did anyone? The vampire had finally raised an eyebrow and looked back up at his men.
"This one's not worth it. Too young to provide any sport."
"But my lord, he invaded our lands."
"My lands," the older vamp had corrected dryly. "Back to the hunt with you."
The others dispersed, leaving Mircea lying in the mud and giggling helplessly at his savior, who had looked down at him again and slowly shaken his head.
"Get to Venice, son,"
he said, gathering up his reins,
"if you can."
"What?"
"There's safety for you there, if you can reach it. A place for those with no masters to guide them. Go there if this life still has any meaning for you."
Then he disappeared, in a flurry of flying hooves and flowing mane. The beautiful horse he rode was so swift that it had vanished beyond a hill before Mircea could pull himself back to his feet and reassure a frightened Hurachu, who had been clinging to the neck of their far less impressive nag and staring at him with huge eyes.
"Why the devil are ye laughing?"
Mircea hadn't responded, just buried his face in his horse's neck and laughed some more. And finally, when he was able to get himself under control, he had looked up.
"Feel like a sea voyage?"
Now he was on another one, because Venice hadn't been quite the haven he had expected. Nothing was when you had no power in a world that valued nothing else. But he hadn't died, no, not any of the times, and he'd lost count of how many there had been, when he damned well should have. And he wasn't dying tonight, he thought, putting everything he had, every ounce of power, into moving just an inch, and failed. Damn it! He felt panic welling up again and gave himself a mental slap. Not now. There had to be a way out of here. There had to. He sent his eye rolling around, trying to see more of the room. It looked like a battlefield, only tidier, including the gore, because some of the bodies were bleeding or had limbs lying at strange angles, perhaps broken or dislocated by the fall. He watched one sort itself out, the broken fragments slowly working back into shape, the blood that a moment ago had been dripping down the arm suddenly reabsorbed. But the vampire himself never moved, never so much as fluttered the eyelashes lying closed and motionless against his too pale cheek. So the body was working, but the mind? Where was the mind? Probably still inside whatever darkness was pulling at him, Mircea thought, feeling it slowing his brain and paralyzing his body, as it had done since he fell through whatever he fell through. He glanced up, but the ceiling was unbroken. Just old cobweb-covered boards, dusty and full of mouse droppings, until what looked like a dark puddle opened up out of nowhere, an inky blackness darker than the pits of hell, which spewed forth the redhead. She hit the floor hard, but was able to catch herself, landing heavily on hands and knees. Whatever this paralysis was, It didn't seem to affect her, which was evidenced even more when she flipped over and started screaming. It wasn't in Venetian, or Italian, or any other language Mircea knew, so he couldn't follow. Plus, he was distracted, staring at the pool of darkness still swirling about the ceiling above her. He'd only recently learned about portals, mage-made devices for traveling from one place to another almost instantaneously, and he wasn't sure this was one. The only other he'd seen had been brilliant, a spill of yellow-white fire, and it sounded like every ocean crashing onto every beach all over the world all at once. It had been deafening and terrifying, and completely unlike the quiet darkness on display here. But then, they couldn't very well have captured any vampires with a golden maw screaming at them, could they? So they'd camouflaged it. Or else it was some other manner of mage trickery he'd yet to learn about, which was most of it, since he avoided the creatures like the plague. Beastly people. Like the ones thundering down the ladder now. Mircea hadn't gotten a good look at them before, but judging by their tread, it was the same two, one carrying a cudgel and the other having a meaty hand laced with lightning, which dimmed and went out when he saw the woman. "Damn it!" He glared at her. "Not again!" The other mage seemed even more incensed. He was a scarred-up specimen half his friend's weight, with greasy dark hair and a nose that looked like it had been broken twice as much as Mircea's, to the point that it had given up retaining any shape whatsoever. But it flushed like the rest of his skin when he suddenly rushed over, grabbed the screaming redhead, and slapped her hard across the face. That stopped the screaming but did nothing else. "I won't!" she yelled. "I won't do it anymore! You can't make me!" "Wanna bet?" "You're a whore," his companion said, coming forward. "In the stews when we found you, giving it up to any old codger with the cash. Now you wear nice clothes and eat good food. What's so wrong with that?" "I might have been a whore," she shouted, "but I wasn't a murderer of children." The thin man raised his hand again, but the other mage caught his arm. He looked like a typical bruiser, one of the burly types who unloaded ships down at the docks, in between boasting about their sexual prowess and pissing into canals. But there was more than a glimmer of intelligence behind those black eyes. "What happened?" he demanded. "A child," the redhead said, her voice catching. "He wanted me to... He was going to take a child." The bruiser sighed. "It's a damned vampire, not a child. That thing is probably older than you, than all of us, and would kill you given half a chance." "You don't know that," she glared at him. "You don't know what he is, what any of them are. And I won't..." Mircea couldn't see her anymore as she'd moved out of his limited range of vision, but the sound of another slap was unmistakable, as were her renewed screams afterward. Like before, they sounded as much of fury as of pain.
"Cut it out," the bruiser said.
"Why?" It was the scrawny man's voice.
"If she won't work, she's no good to us." "Oh, she'll work, and we need her pretty."
"I won't, I tell you." It was the woman again. "I can't."
"You can and you will. If we have to train another, it's going to hold things up, and we haven't time for that."
"I don't care." A sudden gasp. "Let go of me."
"Why? If you don't get back to it, you'll be servicing worse than us soon. Or have you forgotten what that's like?"
"Stop it. Let me go."
"I'll stop it when you come to your senses."
He laughed.
"Or maybe when I'm finished."
"You'll stop it now."
The voice came from neither of the three humans, but from someone else who had slipped through the portal while everyone was distracted, and dropped to the ground, silent and unnoticed, which wasn't surprising. Even now, looking right at him, Mircea couldn't really see him. Just a vague, human-shaped shadow, slightly darker than the rest, but which could have been a trick of the light flickering in a nearby lantern.
"We were just," the bruiser began, before a brief gesture cut him off.
"On deck."
The voice was a hoarse rasp. "Prepare for docking."
The bruiser looked like he was about to argue, but for once the gaunt sailor was smarter.
"Come on."
He tugged at his companion's arm,
then went back upstairs.
The vampire looked at the redhead. She had moved back into view, holding her cheek. The shadow pushed her hand away and ignored the shudder that went through her.
"My apologies,"
he murmured, healing the reddened flesh with a touch.
"I won't do it,"
she told him, her voice shaking.
"I can't."
"Shh."
He dragged a finger down the side of her face. From a human, it would have been an affectionate or possibly sensual gesture. In this case, it reminded Mircha of nothing so much as a horseman soothing a startled filly. It reeked of possession. But it seemed to work. The redhead's eyelids fluttered, and she sank down beside the wall, her head already lolling.
"Sleep,"
he told her.
"Forget."
And then she was out. Chapter 38.
"Hey! Hey! Wake up!"
I grumbled and turned over. Or I tried, but my knee hit something, and a loud horn blasted my eardrum, and I sat up abruptly and hit my head.
"Take it easy."
My eyes focused on Finn, who was peering in the car door down by my feet.
"So you want the cherry slushy, or..."
He stopped and squinted at something neon blue in an oversized cup.
"Whatever the hell this is."
I blinked at him, slowly realizing that I'd been sleeping in my car. He pushed the cups at me again.
"They didn't have cola?"
I croaked.
"Like I know. I don't got a charm with me, so what do you think's gonna happen if I go in the store like this?"
I took a cup from him. It was cold.
"Then who did?"
He looked at something over my shoulder, and I twisted around to see a massive silhouette against a glittering skyline, a bunch of dark water, and a half-sunk boat, and a little wild-haired woman standing on a rock dabbing at a Hulk's shoulder.
"What happened?"
I asked blearily.
"We started to take on water. Don't you remember?"
Vaguely.
You were as high as a kite, on all those disorienting charms. What do you do? Take one full in the face?"
"A crateful." And now I had the hangover from hell.
"Yeah, and who knows what else was in there. Why didn't you just run out the door like the rest of us?"
I glared at him around the side of the icy I was holding to my throbbing head.
"Gee, why didn't I think of that?"
"Ah, sarcasm. Good. Means you're okay."
"Wait." I had slumped down, and now I sat up, and hit my head again.
"Son of a bitch!
How'd I get the car?" I called after Finn, who had started walking back toward the gas station we were parked beside, and was almost hit by a truck barreling into bay number 2.
"Hey, I'm walking here!"
He made a rude gesture at the driver.
"Finn!"
He turned around.
"You ran back for it, then drove back here to meet us and collapsed."
He walked off before I could ask anything else, slurping on the cherry icy, while the truck driver and I stared at him. I got tired of it first and climbed out of the car. It took a lot longer than normal, and a lot more effort. I leaned against the hood, panting and drinking neon blue stuff for a while, because at least it was cold. The night wasn't, and after the jog I didn't remember, my sweats were living up to their name. The gas station was up a hill from the waterfront, with some apartments on one side and a storage facility on the other. A scraggly tree grew down near the rocks, which were covered in graffiti,
like the ones by the warehouse. New graffiti, because it was super bright and seemed to move in my peripheral vision whenever I looked away from it. Squiggle, look. Squiggle, look. Trippy. Especially with Dorina's memories, or whatever the hell they were, still sloshing about my cranium. Sometimes it felt like she was trying to tell me something, like when she gave me that mental slap for thinking I'd had it worse than her. But sometimes it felt like I just plugged into random bits of her memories, or Mircha's, because she seemed to have riffled through his brain a lot, taking whatever she wanted. I wondered if the great mentalist had known that he was being spied on, and by his baby daughter at that. Or one of them. A spike of pain tore through my temples, and I went down to my haunches, holding my head. I wanted to go home and crawl into bed. I wanted the stiff drink I hadn't gotten at Finn's. I wanted the landscape to stop slinging around every time I freaking moved. After a while, it did, staying mostly steady when I looked up. But I decided there was a slight chance I wasn't in any shape to drive right now. I drank some more of Big Blue, and then I decided that I might as well go and meet the other one, formally this time. I got up and walked across the road. The big guy was down the incline, slumped under the tree, trying to get as low as possible so his diminutive assistant could treat his wounds. He had a lot of them. Cuts and gouges, some deep, which I guess had been the result of flying shrapnel. What looked like a potion burn on the side of his face, which had barely missed an eye. And something I'd seen before. A chest that was almost black, eclipsing the copper highlights that gleamed on his shoulders in the distant gas station lights, and which I now knew meant bleeding under the skin. He'd gotten himself a gargantuan bruise, I guess from where the mage's combined spell had hit. It looked painful, but the fact that it hadn't torn through his chest was nothing short of miraculous. A combined spell was a bitch. I offered him the rest of my icy, and to my surprise he took it, and seemed to like the flavor. Or maybe he was just thirsty. He drank it in about 5 seconds before I could warn him about brain freeze, but I guess that wasn't a thing for trolls, because he immediately looked around for more. "I'll get you another," I offered, because I had a certain amount of fellow feeling, and because I'd just remembered that convenience stores carry beer. "You want something?" I asked Granny, who shook her head.
"Got it covered," she told me, and pulled a hip flask out of a pocket. "But some more Bactine would be good, and some of that tape they use for bandages."
"Okay." I wandered back to the store, loaded up, and came outside again to find Finn dragging a U-Haul trailer past the front door. Or part of one. It was the little half-kind. "Where are you going with that?" I asked him.
"I'm gonna attach it to your car."
"Okay, no." He paused.
"What do you mean, no? And what's with the food?"
"Thought they might be hungry."
"So you're giving them that? Where's the fish?"
"What fish? It's a convenience store. They have Slim Jims and Icy's."
"Well, we're gonna need some fish."
"Why do we need fish? And stop walking."
"I gotta get this hooked to the car."
"You're not going to hook it to the car."
"And why not?"
"I don't have a hitch." Thereafter followed a long string of out-of-breath cussing, followed by,
"What do you mean you don't have a hitch?"
"Why would I have a hitch?"
"Everybody has a hitch. What do you do when you need to haul stuff?"
"I rent a truck." And shit, I'd forgotten Stan's truck again. He was going to skin me. And that was assuming I could find the thing, since it hadn't been at the house. Where the hell had I left it?
"What kind of truck?" Finn said, looking around.
"What?"
"You said we need a truck. What kind?"
I didn't say that. And you realize we're having this convo in front of the store, right? Where everybody can see you?
There's nobody around.
There's that guy. I pointed with the icy at the guy who'd stared at Finn earlier. He'd gotten his gas and what looked like a couple hot dogs and one of the nachos of death things these places always try to pawn off on you, like that cheese hasn't been in the crock for 2 weeks. But he wasn't eating any of it, and not because it was nasty, but because he was staring at Finn.
"Hey, that guy's got a truck,"
Finn said speculatively. And then, before I could stop him, he dropped the mini-haul and went charging across the gas station toward the guy, whose eyes blew wide and whose food went everywhere when he threw the truck into gear and screeched out of the lot, like all the demons of hell were after him. Or one big-nosed forest troll, who stood there shouting something for a minute before stomping back over.
"Well, what the hell do we do now?"
"You can't just steal a truck."
"I wasn't gonna steal it. I was gonna borrow it."
"And you can't go around talking to norms without a charm. You're gonna get picked up." Finn rolled his eyes so hard he almost fell over.
"Yeah, sure. That's what's gonna get me picked up."
"Look, just take that back where you got it from. If Blue and his lady friend want a ride, we'll fit him in the car somehow." Thank God it was a convertible.
"And what about the others?"
I felt my stomach drop. What others? Small hands found small hips.
"Well, who do you think, Dory?"
5 minutes later, we were down by the water again, having towed the mini-haul over by the car simply to get it out of the way. And I was staring at, I didn't even know, 8, 9, maybe 10 Selkies, all crowded up against the colorful rocks in the shallows. And not looking good. I guess because they'd had to swim after the boat, although I didn't see why they'd bothered. They were in the ocean. That was their thing, right? Why not swim away? Only they weren't looking like they felt like swimming right now. Some were gasping for breath. Others were using their flippers to weakly stroke their companions, some of whom had their eyes closed and honestly looked like they might never open them again. Well, damn.
"We need to get them to a healer."
"That's what I said,"
Finn told me, pawing through the bags of assorted stuff I'd bought.
"But they're afraid whoever it is will rat them out. They say they'll be okay with some rest and food."
He looked up.
"Are you sure there's no salmon or anything?"
"It's a convenience store."
"Well, it seems like a poorly stocked one."
He opened some jerky and waved it around, but nobody seemed interested.
"They'd probably eat it in their human form," he said. "But transformed, it's like the animal mind gets a veto, you know?"
"No, not really. But that didn't matter right now." "I could go get something," I offered, handing over the medical supplies. And some cigs, because the witch, or whatever she was, had looked like she was running low.
"Hey, thanks!"
She hiked up her skirts and tucked the packet in the top of her stocking.
"No way," Finn told me. "You're gonna stay here till you don't zigzag when you walk."
"I don't do that."
"You just did that all the way down the hill."
"You're imagining things."
"Yeah, not imagining shit."
He held out a hand. "What?"
"The keys."
It took me a moment.
"You're not driving my car."
"I'm not. I can't reach the pedals. She is."
He pointed at Granny.
"I'm pretty sober," she assured me. "It probably won't end up like last time."
I blinked. "Last time?"
"The truck. Man, that was something, wasn't it?"
"What truck?"
"Dory, I need the damn keys."
That was Finn. "What truck?" I persisted, getting a really bad feeling about this.
"That big one," she told me cheerfully. "Hoo boy, that was fun to drive."
"Wait, you drove the big truck?" She nodded. "Like the
six-wheel truck?
More nodding.
And something happened to it?
Would you stop that?
Finn was looking pissed.
We got sick people here, and I gotta get something to hold that thing onto the back of your car, 'cause we're never gonna fit them all inside otherwise, and you're doing what? Oh, yeah, bitching.
I don't bitch.
Give me the damn keys. Here!
I was impressed I didn't throw them at him, but placed them in his tiny little asshole palm.
Finally.
He looked at Granny.
You done? As much as I could. You ought to take a few days off,
she told Blue, who grunted at her. And then she and Finn left in a squeal of tires. I stared after them. She didn't even slow down for the stop sign. After a minute, I decided I might as well get comfortable and pulled a six-pack of long necks out of one of the bags. I handed Blue one, took one for myself, and discovered the heretofore unknown fact that seals liked beer. Well, Selkies, anyway. I poured some down the throats of the interested parties, and then Blue and I sat and drank for a while. The city lights on the water were nice. The place smelled like gasoline, brackish water, and a fish rotting somewhere nearby, but I had smelled worse. And, slowly, the graffiti was calming down, so I didn't get dizzy from staring at it anymore. Blue drank his beer and ate everything in sight, including two loaves of bread, a package of bologna, two boxes of power bars, a quart of orange juice, a bag of Cheetos, eight candy bars, four apples, the only fruit the store had, a dozen donuts, six hot dogs, another Blue Icy, and 16 Slim Jims, which was fine, but made me feel like maybe I should have gotten more. You want anything else?
No.
The voice was deep and rumbling, as if a mountain could talk. It fit him, and it kind of surprised me, although I didn't know why. He'd been looking like he was following well enough. If he could understand English, of course, he could probably speak it, too. You want something for the pain? He shook his head, and then looked skyward. I wasn't sure why. It was too cloudy to see the moon right now. I wanted to question him, but this didn't seem the time. I wanted to help him, but wasn't sure how, or even what would be acceptable. I knew Olga, Finn, and the twins, but I didn't think they were necessarily representative of troll culture in general. Olga and Finn had been here for years, and the twins were young and impressionable. They'd become a weird amalgam of human teenage weirdness and dark fae habits, and anyway, I was used to them. I wasn't used to him. But I wanted to do something. You want anything at all? I asked, and waited. This was a troll, after all. But the answer came more quickly than I'd expected.
4 and 5.
I waited some more. What?
6 and 7.
Okay. Confused now. But then the giant head bent down, and the tiny eyes were serious. And angry, but not at me. I stared into their depths and saw a banked fury, a quiet outrage that was somehow more compelling than any physical thing I'd seen him do.
They destroy. They dishonor. They pay.
The slavers? A nod. So 1, 2, and 3 are dead? It seemed a fair guess. Another nod. So that leaves 4. But he hadn't spoken of them that way, had he? 2 groups of 2? Another nod. Okay, getting the hang of this now. So you're after 2 more groups of slavers. You know where they are?
Not know. Not yet.
It's just, there's a lot of slavers in New York. We're trying to shut them down, but they're good at hiding.
They blaspheme. They disgrace.
Yeah, they're bad people.
They destroy. They kill and kill again.
Okay, okay. I held up my hands in the universal, "See, I have no weapons, please don't kill me," gesture, because he was suddenly furious. And bending over me in a way that would have been intimidating, even if my weapons hadn't still been in the car, except for the pain in his eyes.
"They take Fay, make fight, make die. And after die, they dishonor, they steal."
He broke off with what I could only assume was a Fay curse. "They steal what?" But I didn't get an answer this time.
"So many lost. So many forgotten. Cannot go back. Cannot go home."
"We'll help them get home. We'll help you." He'd turned his head to look out over the water, but now he turned it back. His eyes were suddenly tired and sad, which was somehow worse than the anger.
"No, they never go back. Bones lost now."
And I suddenly remembered something Cademan had said, something about the bones of a dead Fay needing to be sent back to Faerie. But that wasn't anything a slaver would care about, was it? If someone died in the fights or any other way, what would they do? Probably just bury them and leave them to rot. Why risk opening a portal when every time you did, it had a chance of being detected? Why bring the circle down on your head just to honor an old tradition? An old tradition that was sacred to a certain portion of Faerie, who believed that if the bones weren't returned, a Fae's soul was lost forever. They kill and kill again. No wonder he wanted them dead. I suddenly noticed that my eyes were wet. I wasn't the weeping type, but the depth of his pain was palpable. And not just the emotional kind, I realized, catching sight of the blood leaking out from under the pad the woman had put on his chest. She might have done her best, but it wasn't good enough. He needed stitches, or whatever the troll equivalent was. Because no matter how strong you are, you can still bleed out. Screw it. I took out my phone and called Claire. She showed up faster than I'd expected, an old trench coat over her nightgown, and her hair in the kind of big foam curlers that make for nice loose curls the next day. She'd brought her kit, but been smart enough to leave the light Fay at home. "Thanks," I told her, as she paid the cabbie, because I'd managed to drown the Lambo. "By the way, did I ever say sorry about your car?"
"Fuck the car."
She pushed a strand of red hair out of her eyes.
"Where are they?"
I led her down to the water's edge, not knowing what kind of reception we were going to get. But to my surprise, the Selkies took one look at her and crowded up on land, as much as they could with the rocks in the way. Blue didn't react, except to watch her as she examined his fellow Fay and dispensed one of her patented horrible-smelling concoctions.
"They're so thin," she murmured.
"Yeah, I don't think they've eaten much lately. And they didn't like jerky and Cheetos." Her lip curled.
"Who does?"
I bit back a reply about Claire's 10,000 recipes for chickpeas, because this wasn't the time.
"We need to get them home," I said instead. "And put them where?"
"They could stay in the dining room?"
"I thought the vampires were in the dining room. Or did you move them upstairs?"
"Shit."
You know about that?"
She shot me a look.
"Dory, I have a house full of Fay guards. They don't miss much."
"Yeah, probably should have thought of that." "And you're not upset?" She sat back on her heels and looked sort of sad.
I'm upset that you feel like you have to sneak people around. It's your house, too. I sat there blinking, but she was already moving on to Blue. I tensed a little. I don't know why. I knew what she was, what she could do. But she looked so tiny next to his massive bulk that I worried anyway. Until I saw the most amazing thing I'd seen all night. The huge, battle-scarred, fearsome troll. The guy who had dangerous slavers quaking in their boots. The guy who had torn apart a warehouse full of who knew what kind of traps, snares, and hexes. Not one, not two, but three nights in a row. And that, after kicking ass at a no-holds-barred epic fight, that guy relaxed back against the tree and closed his eyes and fell asleep. Chapter 39. Half an hour later, I was pouring a 2 liter of water over Claire's green-to-the-elbow arms, and Big Blue had a bunch of concrete in his chest. At least, that's what it looked like. I assumed it was something more medicinal, since Claire had troweled it straight into the big wounds, where it finally stopped the seepage. It had also left Blue looking like an about-to-be-vacated apartment, with spackle everywhere, but apparently it would be absorbed by the body as it healed and wouldn't do any harm. And it didn't look like it had hurt him, since he'd snored through most of it. In other news, my car was back without noticeable damage, and so was a truck, which Finn had had a couple of his guys bring over, since he hadn't been able to find anyone to install a hitch in the middle of the night. They were big strapping guys that he used for security and other things, like loading up a bunch of Selkies. They'd also brought Finn a charm, which had transformed him into a short guy with a wild shock of brown hair and a big nose. It was weird. He still looked identifiably himself, with small eyes and roughly the same shaped face, just humanized, at least enough that we weren't likely to scare anybody else. So things were looking up. "Things are looking up," I told Claire. She bit her lip. "Aren't they?" She tilted the bottle's mouth to stop the flow and lathered up with some soap she'd brought with her. She made her own when she had time, and this one smelled of lavender. It was nice. Her expression wasn't.
"I did something," she told me abruptly. "I was waiting up to tell you about it because I couldn't get you on the phone, but then..."
She glanced around at a burly guy walking past with a human-sized seal over his shoulder and sighed. "Then things got crazy." I grinned at her. She didn't grin back.
"You're going to be angry," she told me.
"I doubt that." Claire and I had our differences from time to time, but we rarely fought.
"I don't."
She was rinsing off, and I could almost see her steeling herself. She finished, and the thin shoulders went back, the curler-bound head came up, and the green eyes met mine head-on. Because whatever else Claire may be, she isn't a coward.
"I called Luis Cesar."
For a moment, I just blinked at her. It was the last thing I'd expected. They didn't even talk in person, if they could avoid it, much less over the phone. I hadn't even known she had his number.
"I didn't even know you had his number," I said.
And it was her turn to blink.
"It was in the house phone. He called once when you had your cell off."
"Oh, yeah, right." She blinked some more.
"Aren't you angry?"
I handed her some napkins to dry off with because we didn't have a towel.
"Should I be? What did you talk about?"
She just looked at me some more. This was getting odd.
"I told him I liked his suit."
"It was a nice suit."
"Dory!"
Claire's eyes were getting brighter, rivaling the gas station lights behind her. She tried drying off using the napkins, but they shredded and stuck to her skin.
"Damn it!"
She shoved the wet wad in a pocket.
"This is when you yell at me for sticking my nose in your business. This is when you tell me I went too far as usual and trampled all over your boundaries while trying to help. This is when you tell me I'm a crap friend for hating your boyfriend like a bigoted know-it-all, because sure, I know vampires better than you when you've lived with them for centuries.
There was a pause. She seemed to be waiting for something, which I guess she didn't get because the thin eyebrows drew together.
Well?
Well, what?
Aren't you going to say it?
Why? You already did. And okay, in retrospect, that probably wasn't the right response, because she burst into tears. I awkwardly put an arm around her shoulders, because that seemed to help last time, and had it angrily shrugged off.
Don't be kind, she told me. I'm a shit friend. I know it. I've been telling myself that for the last 2 hours.
I didn't say you were a shit friend.
Well, I did, and I am.
She angrily wiped off napkin residue like she was shedding a second skin.
You never yell at me, even when you should. And I know why, she said,
when I started to open my mouth.
You never had a roommate before. You don't have anyone to compare me to, but trust me, I'm shit.
Claire, you're not shit.
Yes, I am.
She looked up, eyes blazing, and then suddenly slumped against the car, the fire gone as fast as it had come.
See? I can't even let you yell at me properly. I have to boss how you do it. I'm overbearing and interfering, and everything always has to be my way. I try not to be. I do. But then something comes along and it just isn't right, and I have to fix it. I have to try, even if I end up screwing everything up and making it worse than before, because I'm shit.
She slid down beside a tire and hugged her knees. I'd been in that position earlier, and it sucked. Nothing ever went well in that position. That was the world's out to get me and probably will position, and it made me sad to see Claire in it. I went over and sat beside her. You're not shit, I told her. She looked at me, her eyes filled with tears.
You haven't heard what I told him yet.
A couple minutes later, I was on the road to Horatius, with the pedal pressed all the way down. Not to see him this time, but to prevent a possible murder. Because when Claire fucked up, she did it right. Not that she had meant to. She'd hoped to get Luis Cesar and me back together by spilling the beans. Namely, that I loved him and was just doing this to protect him, and how he should have been able to see that when it was clear as day to everyone else, and that he should have stayed and fought for me. But instead, he'd just turned and walked away. I guess she'd talked to Sawinnie. And if he was that much of an idiot, he didn't deserve me. When she finally let him get a word in, he'd reminded her that she didn't know anything about our relationship and that it was her father-in-law trying to steal me away in the first place, and apparently succeeding because I clearly preferred him, and that this was none of her business, so perhaps she should, and he meant this in the most respectful and courteous way possible, die in a fire. Then, of course, Claire got pissed, because, let's face it, it never takes much to set her off, and said that she must have misjudged him, that he really was a giant idiot and that I'd probably be better off with someone else anyway, like that Marlowe fellow. I didn't know why the hell she'd picked him. Kit Marlowe was the consul's pit bull and chief of security. He was also a giant dick. He and I cordially loathed each other. And while we had developed a somewhat decent working relationship recently out of necessity, our lips still had a tendency to curl when the other walked into a room. He hated, and I mean hated, the idea that a Damphir was on his beloved Senate, polluting it with my very presence. And I? Well, I just hated him. He made it really easy. So, no, Marlowe was not an issue. But apparently Luis Cesar now thought he was, because Claire's mouth and brain don't talk to each other when she gets upset, and Marlowe was one of the only non-family vamps she knew. And she'd somehow managed to convey the idea that he'd been nosing around,
and was now ready to pounce since his competition had just fled the scene, like the cowardly bastard that he was. She'd fit that phrase in a few more times before she realized that my ex was no longer on the phone, but not like he'd hung up. More like he'd simply dropped it while doing something else, something that I really hoped wasn't driving hell-bent for leather toward a certain annoying bastard of a Senate member who was, probably about to have a bad night. To give her credit, Claire had tried calling Luis Cesar back when she calmed down, but his phone was busy. It was for me, too, which was a problem, but not as much as hearing one of his masters, who had answered the landline at his place, inform me that he'd left rather abruptly earlier this evening, and could he take a message? No, but he could convey one. Only apparently he hadn't, because I hadn't gotten a call. That was a problem, since, according to the Senate's New York HQ, Marlowe was currently at Mircea's Central Park apartment for some reason, and Mircea's place was roughly 3 hours from Luis Cesar's, which would be great if Claire's little creative foray hadn't taken place over 2 hours ago, and if I wasn't in Brooklyn. I tried mushing the pedal through the floor, but it would only go so far. So I gave up and called Marlowe, or rather Mircea's place, because I didn't know his personal number. Burbles of House Happiness answered, and was overjoyed to talk to me.
"Lady Dorina! How wonderful!"
"Dory, is Luis Cesar there?"
"No. I haven't seen his lordship for, why, it must be almost a week now. Is he supposed to be here?"
"No, no, he is not. Is Marlowe?"
"Oh, yes. Lord Marlowe is entertaining tonight. Shall I tell him you'll be joining us?"
I didn't know why Marlowe was entertaining at Mircea's apartment, or why he was entertaining at all. He was a spy, not a diplomat, and an abrupt bastard at the best of times. But I didn't ask because I didn't care. "Can I talk to him?"
"Of a certainty. Give me a moment."
He wandered off, and I got another call. I answered it before looking at the screen, and damn it, I knew better. "Luis Cesar?"
"James." Shit.
Guess he'd had time to clean up the mess.
Look, James, I can't really talk right..." "The hell you can't. You destroy my crime scene and then you have the gall?"
"I didn't destroy anything. Your own guys did that."
"That's not what they say."
"Well, of course it's not what they say. I bet they didn't mention trying to beat me up as soon as the lights went out either."
"Their report says the opposite. That you almost killed them trying to get out the door."
"I couldn't even find the door. And you were there."
"And didn't see shit, thanks to a couple thousand spells going off in my face."
My phone beeped again. "Hang on," I told him.
"Hang on? Hang on? Don't you dare."
"Yes?" I asked the second line.
"Dory."
"Shit." "Stan." "Oh, hey, look, man. I'm kind of busy right now." I hit the dashboard.
"What was that?"
Just putting away some bad guys. You know how it is." I hit it a few more times, which sounded like I was hitting the dashboard. Stan seemed to think so, too.
"So hit him in this direction and bring back my truck. You know it's 3 days overdue, right?"
"Sure. Absolutely. Was just going to do that. Look, is there some kind of weekly special?"
"Yeah. Bring my truck back before the week's out and Roberto's boys don't break your legs."
"Pissant little son of a..." "You know I'm a senator," I said, to no one, because he'd already hung up. I switched back to James, or so I thought.
"You are not invited."
"Marlowe?"
"Do you understand me?"
The voice was livid. What else was new? "Invited to what?"
"None of your business. Go away."
"Listen."
"No, you listen. This is an important night for me, for all of us.
I am not going to have you ruin it.
I'm not trying to...
You never try, but it always happens. You went to the theater, and now there's no theater.
I started to say that wasn't my fault, but it was a little my fault. I'm not trying to crash your damn party. I just need to tell you...
If I see one glimpse or get so much as a single whiff...
Like you know what I smell like. I was trying to keep my temper, I really was, but Marlowe was like nails on a chalkboard. And it's Mircha's apartment. I'll come any time I damned well...
You'll be escorted off the property. In pieces.
I actually laughed at that one. By you and whose army?
I don't need an army.
He somehow managed to hiss it, despite it not having any S's.
I'm warning you. Stay away.
He hung up. God damn it. I started to call him back, but then realized I already had a call waiting. Hello?
Don't you dare hang up on me again.
I sighed. James. I didn't hang up before. I had another call. And why are we talking about this? I have immunity. And that aside, you are almost finished.
You don't get to decide when we're finished with a crime scene. You don't get to decide anything. Particularly when you use your shiny new immunity to aid and abet the escape of a dozen felons.
A dozen? I frowned. 10 of them were slaves. They didn't do any...
They hid the troll who caused all this. They deliberately used their bodies to hide his signal and that of the woman he's working with.
They didn't hide anything. Sitting on a floor is hardly...
And as a result, I have a warrant in my hand for their arrest.
Don't be a dick, James. This is on me. They had nothing to do with it.
And another for your friend Finn, who does not, in fact, have immunity.
James?
I'm not bluffing, Dory. I want the big guy. Now.
I don't have him.
Don't lie. You do it badly.
I do it perfectly, but I'm not doing it now. It was the truth. The freaked-out trucker had returned with a skeptical-looking cop just as I was leaving, and I'd nervously looked back at the waterline to see exactly nothing. Big as he was, Blue moved like smoke.
"If you think that's going to work,"
James said ominously. "I don't have him."
"Then your friend is going to enjoy our hospitality until you do."
"James!"
"I want the Selkies, too,"
he went on ruthlessly.
"No one even had a chance to question them. You bring me the dozen you cost me, and your friend goes free. Otherwise, I'm sure there's plenty of..."
"You're not going to lock him up."
"Counts I can dig up on one of the biggest bookies in this city. He could go away for years, or even be deported, if we rack up enough charges."
I didn't answer that time. I just sat there for a moment, holding my phone. Every war mage I knew was a giant asshole. Every single one, except for James. The last time I'd seen him, other than tonight, had been a month or so ago, on one of his days off. He'd been painting his dad's shop, while his wife cooked burgers in the small courtyard out back, and his youngest daughter wove a wreath out of centaury and feverfew, which he proudly wore while we ate. I had dropped in to pick up an order, and they'd invited me to share their meal because that's the kind of people they were. James, his wife Jean, and their two little girls, Janice, because James loved classic rock and had wanted to keep the J thing going, and Lakshmi, because that had been the name of their grandmother, and some things are more important than alliteration. Rufus' wife had been gone 6 years now, and I strongly suspected that was why James and family visited so often. It was less about chores that needed doing and more about giving the old man voices around the place other than his own. And because that's who James was, at least on his days off. He couldn't be that different at work. So he was bluffing. I knew he was. But Finn... I didn't think James understood about Finn. The forest trolls don't have a forest